Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I'm Alex, and this week I'm joined by the very unprofessional Dale Driver.
Hello. Why am I unprofessional?
We'll come back to that in a second. And the very professional Matt Pursley.
I'll take that as a compliment. Exactly. Thank you very much.
So the better compliment.
Matt is always exceptional at work, I like to think. You know, he always puts in 110%. And delivers what he promises. Whereas you, Dale,
is this my review for the year? It You're doing it on the podcast.
This is being sent straight to HR, Ziff Davis.
Right.
It's just like, put your bottle on the table. That's it. No, not on the table. On the floor. And get me.
Yeah, I always have it on the table for some reason. I don't know. But yeah, I moved it onto the floor for you.
You're just doing some kind of crazy reach around. Nobody wants. Nobody wants that on the podcast.
No, I don't want that either.
No. So you haven't been here for a little while.
Well, I was away over the weekend and Monday and Tuesday, I guess, as well. But yeah, I'm back now. I was in San Francisco.
I was going to say, that's what we're building up to. I don't really care how long you're away.
I think Matt, were you on last week's podcast?
Yes.
So I think they briefly mentioned Cardi was going to San Francisco.
Yeah, everybody knows that Cardi is away for a week. He's still over there. We don't want him back. We do, but not now.
Well, I didn't slack off there for a week. I was just in and out, bish, bash, bosh.
Yeah, I don't know if we fully explained what the mission was, though.
Okay.
Are you allowed to tell us what the mission was?
I think so.
To win.
Yeah, I don't see why not. So me, Jesse and Cardi went over there to play Rainbow Six Siege, but against our US counterparts who do a show called On the Six.
So here's a question. Mm-hmm. Why did they pick the B team to go over there?
Hello. some might say it was... Cardi is, I would say, our best player.
Yep.
So he was
He's the most
one.
Consistent, definitely.
Yeah. Jesse has got, you know, youthful Twitch skills. He's also good on mouse and keyboard as well.
He's the wild card, definitely.
He's definitely the wild card. He makes some rash decisions.
He can have 13 kills or be killed 13 times in a split second.
And I went because I organised it, so I'm going.
Right. You're the dad of the trip.
But yeah, I don't want to reveal how it went. The video's coming out, I believe, in about a week or so, maybe a little bit longer. Don't hold me to that. But we had a good time. I won't tell you what happened, but it was good fun.
Cool. Who were you against?
So we were against Sydney, Destin, and Jordan Parker. So I believe he's an editor. So I don't think he does anything on camera except for this.
Yeah. And Jordan's quite well known. He takes Siege seriously, right?
He definitely takes FPSs seriously. Mm-hmm. So in the morning, we went in and we had to shoot a little piece to camera, like introducing ourselves to the audience.
Yeah.
And Jordan was in there behind us. And obviously, once we started rolling, he left the room. Yeah. But beforehand, he was just in there all morning practicing, endless practicing. I was like, is this cool? Because I'm jet lagged here and I could do with some practice time as well. Didn't have the opportunity.
We practice enough.
That is true. And they were quite surprised to find out that we play every single day. I think they thought we liked it, but they didn't realize that how dedicated we truly are.
You were saying earlier that you were in bed reading the patch notes.
Which that was is last like, night, yeah.
Oh my God, what is wrong with you?
I couldn't get to sleep and I just saw a tweet about the patch notes. I was like, so I'm going to read
you
this.
You romantic devil,
it's
you.
Interesting. You'll be thanking me when the patch comes and you can't understand why something's changed. I'll explain it to you.
Reading right. out the reducements of Legion's goo mines to your wife.
Did you used to do that with Overwatch as well?
Patch notes.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to read them because I used to present a show about Overwatch. I never did it in bed.
I remember the early days of Overwatch when we played it religiously. I would look forward to reading the patch notes as well.
I don't think I've ever read the patch notes for any game. No.
Oh, I do. I love reading them.
Patch notes tend to be more fun for Overwatch because you get Jeff Kaplan from the Overwatch team come on and do his little dev diaries, which they need a face for Rainbow, right? They can do a dev diary. Yeah. They've got no one.
I think the most interesting part for me is not necessarily seeing what the changes, but why they implemented implemented the change. Like, why are you changing this weapon's shot power from 24 to 21? Yeah. It's really interesting.
Because it's too powerful?
Well, yeah. They're looking at lots of diagrams, aren't they? And lots of data, and I suppose, and working on this
stuff.
That
doesn't sound very interesting.
It is to me, right? That sort of stuff.
Well, while you were away, we didn't really play Siege at all.
No.
Mainly because there wasn't enough of us. Yeah, that's it. We played the Hunt Showdown, which has been in early access for quite a while, right?
Yeah, I mean, it came out on PC in early access, like maybe in 2017, I think.
Yeah, it feels like that.
But it's only over the last kind of 3 months, I think it's been coming out at like 1.0 full release. And last week it came out on PS4, which is what we play on.
Yeah. Mm. So do you know anything about it, Dale?
Not really. I believe when it first launched, a Welsh gentleman who used to work in this office went and did some sort of preview coverage of it. That's all I remember about it. I know you're a team of three, and there's other teams of three in the world, much like a sort of battle royale sort of situation. And then it's something to do with monsters and things.
Well, you're hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's multiple targets, isn't there? But you're contracted.
It depends on what map you're on. I say what map you're on. The map is always the same, I think, but sometimes it puts two targets on, sometimes it just puts one.
Right. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that you've got to go and follow clues to find and ultimately kill the monster. That's distilling it into its very basic form. So there is more complexities.
Is it like Monster Hunter, as in it takes a long time to fight, or is the battle getting to it?
Well, it's like...
I think both, really.
Yeah, the battle is obviously, you've got to find the clues, but the whole environment is triggered to like basically reveal other people. So if you hear gunshots nearby, then you know that you've got other hunters that you've either got to avoid or tackle face on. And then, you know, when you get to the point when you found the clues, you know where the enemy is, where the main monster is. Mm. When you start shooting, obviously all hell is kind of breaking loose. But then once it's dead, you've got to banish it.
Okay.
And then everybody on the map knows, right, that's being banished. So everybody bundles over to that spot. And it takes forever.
Yeah, the banishing is very much like, because it's the monsters are very kind of bloodborne, eldritch horror sort of things. You've got like, there's a giant spider who I guess is the most obvious one, but there's also the butcher who's like this huge ogre that's had his head cut off and replaced it with a pig and he can spit fire.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, exactly. Then you've got the assassin, which is sort of like this hooded spectral thing that can like disappear and reappear elsewhere. But yeah, if you manage to kill them, and like they take a lot of bringing down. When you kill them, you start doing this banishing ritual, which like probably it feels like it takes half an hour, but I reckon it's like 2 minutes.
It's a couple of minutes, yeah.
A ritual, you say.
Yeah.
So you're all just sitting there, like gathered around a.
That happens while, but you like defending.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like a zone or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, but when you start doing it effectively, because everybody has what's called dark vision, which is what they use to figure out where to go. So it's like, you know how Jason has the Jason vision in Friday the 13th? Imagine that.
Yeah.
But when people use dark vision while you're banishing, they can literally see like bolts of lightning coming out of the sky to where you are.
Oh my God.
So everybody starts going for it, because the whole aim of the game basically is once you've banished like one of these monsters, you take a bounty coin off the corpse and you've just got to get out of there. And there are like four kind of exit spots on the map. And obviously if you've got like a team that, because you don't always have to go in as three, you might only be going in as one.
Okay.
If you're going as one, you're probably not going to defeat that monster. So what you do is you hide outside, you wait for someone to kill the monster, take it, shoot them on the way out, and then peg it.
Is there only ever one monster that everybody's chasing?
Sometimes there's two, and what it does is it'll sort of split the map in half, and then like if you're finding clues in the bottom half, it starts to, because when you find a clue, what it does is it blanks out sections of the map and it's like, don't look here, look in these bits that are lit up. So if you're finding stuff in the bottom half of the map, that's for one contract. If you're finding in the top half, that's for the other one. So when there's two contracts on the map, it sort of makes the game a little bit easier because you might only be going up against another two teams, but if everybody's looking for the same one, then obviously the tension is increased.
So how is it like a battle royale situation where there's one team left standing, or is that the one that cashes the bounty in? Or?
No,
it's the team that escapes.
Escapes.
So you've got to grab the bounty and escape. So you could literally get right, and you've got to wait for 30 seconds, I think?
Yeah, to get out.
By the cart to escape. So you could have your bounty stolen there and somebody could run off with it.
I've done that.
Okay.
Fuck people up.
That's kind of like the Dark Zone and Division.
Exactly.
As well.
A lot like Extraction.
Yeah.
But it's sort of... there's almost a little bit of Dishonored or Thief to it, in that, like, I think it encourages you to stay quiet. But as you're, quite a lot of the monsters are hidden in like giant factories, because it's all like cowboy era, like Louisiana on the frontier. So it might be giant wood mills or factories or barns, but like they're full of hanging chains. There's always, as you're walking through sort of like fields, there are like crows that are feasting on dead corpses.
Lovely.
And like everything that you're walking past, ducks or
everything,
like dead horses
noise
on the floor that you think are dead, but as you walk by, they start like whinnying and sort of trying to get up. Everything will give your position away. So it's about like being real quiet and only letting like the gunshots off when you know that like I can nail this guy.
How big is the map? Is it? It's quite significant.
Yeah, it's a decent size.
Yeah, like, I'd say it's not as big as like a big battle royale, but it's certainly, it's a sizable world.
Like, we didn't encounter that many hunters up until the point where you'd find, well, we did the first game and like right at the beginning, they happened to be going for the same clue that we were going for. But they were being very loud, and so we managed to come up behind and take most of them out.
So you're always encouraged to kill other hunters? Like, you'd not work together necessarily?
Could
you not work with another team to take down a monster and then see who survives?
There's no sort of, certainly at the moment, I don't know if this is something they might want to think about adding in, but there's no way to like signal a truce between you and another team.
Right, yeah.
But I do quite like the idea of you working together to kill it, and then it's like guns at dawn.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's very much like the guns are all like old single action revolvers or lever action shotguns and stuff like that. So those battles are really, really tense, because like if you don't shoot him in the head first go, you've got like a good second before you can get another one in the chamber.
Yeah. Okay. What about the characters then? Are they just generic dudes, or do you have like heroes that you pick?
It's odd, right?
Like, you suffered a permanent fatality.
Yeah, so it's got permadeath in it. Which is, so for the first 10 levels of the game, like, you don't have to worry about it to like ease you into the idea. But what you do is there's actually like a recruitment pool, and like how in XCOM you're choosing like just soldiers and like, hey, that guy looks like he's got really good like traits and I really like those and want to use them. So Hunt's got characters like that, so you recruit one in. So when they start, that you'll sort of go, oh, he's got like a revolver with a scope on it, that looks really interesting. And he comes with grenades that can stick into things, so you choose them on that. But then as you level them up, you can give them cooler abilities, like every time you find a clue they get half their health back.
Okay.
Or like Fan the Hammer is the best one, because it suddenly turns a really slow revolver into like a semi-machine gun. But if you get killed, they're gone forever.
That's mad.
So it's like you have to be very, very cautious. And it's also like you can have like a recruitment pool where you're like, I've actually got five characters on the go. So if you're going in with people that you don't really know and you're like, maybe I've not got a guarantee that I'll get out of this one alive, taking one of your weaker characters. But like if you're in a team with people you know are really good and there's probably a good chance we'll win, you take one of your better characters in.
So you're always leveling up and specking a character, but then you can lose those, I don't know what they call, ability points, I guess. Something like that, if they die.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds cool.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm surprised at how much I like it. It's because it's so tense.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's not just about being the last man standing. It's like, just, it's about being clever and figuring out when's the time to strike. Do I leave now, or do I wait a little bit longer? Do I try and steal the bounty from someone, or do I get it myself? Like, there's
always
loads to
always
think.
Steal it from someone.
Well, it reminded me of Evolve at certain times, but then with the added threat of other teams, who honestly were a greater threat most of the time. Because they're just like, you know, you've got one big bad. Although there are lots of, are they zombies?
It's like the world is obviously gone to shit. It's not got a storyline, but it's definitely had like a zombie uprising. Yeah. So there's zombies shuffling around all the time. But there's also like dead dogs that come at you. There's like giant fat things that have got machetes. There's
like some of the enemies reminded me a little bit of Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
In like the hive, which is like this bent over kind of female corpse that if you get too close, swarms of bees or hornets or whatever they are come towards you.
Yeah. And it's like you have to shoot her in the head really for her to go down, but obviously the head is sort of halfway down her spine because of the way it's broken in two.
To get around the back then, I guess.
Yeah, it's really grisly, but like in a fun way.
It sounds fun. I want to check it out.
We should do it. Mm. Let's put Rainbow Six on hold just for one lunchtime. Just for lunchtime.
Problem is, if there's three people in, it makes perfect sense. If there's four people in, it feels like Siege.
Yeah, but there's six of us, so we can have two lots going. See if we can get in the same match.
If we get all six of us in the office at one point, that doesn't happen that often these days.
Monday.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Now, before you went away, you also got to play Resident Evil 3.
I did. I played like
Is it just called that, or is it called Remake as well?
No, so it's just called Resident Evil 3.
Right.
Like, there's so I think the confusion there is Final Fantasy VII is officially called Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah.
But Resident Evil 2 and 3 are just, they don't use the word remake. We call it that. But,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to play about 2 hours of it. I also got to play another couple of hours of Resistance as well, which is the multiplayer mode. Feeling like I'm already done with that part of it, to be honest. Like,
right.
we played it a bunch of XO, and then I played it a bunch of, I've probably played about 4 or 5 hours of it. Feel like I've kind of had my fill at this point. It is really fun when you play with friends, but there's only so many times you can do that same loop. I say that as we play Siege every day, but you know, that game feels like it's different every time, where Resident Evil Resistance feels like the same.
Yep.
Anyway, the main event was obviously the single player game, and all I can say is it's really, really, really good.
Yay!
Yeah, like Nemesis is incredible as well. Like, I was very much going into this anticipating how they were going to step up Mr. X.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because from the original, Mr. X was a big step up anyway. So he's not even in the A playthrough in Resident Evil 2. He doesn't come to like the B playthrough.
Right.
And he wasn't like quite the pursuer that he was in Resident Evil 2. But Nemesis definitely was that in Resident Evil 3. So they had to step up again. And it's crazy how tense and scary that thing is as well. Like, as soon as... You have sections where he'll just appear, right? There'll be obviously sections where he's not there.
Yeah.
But when the sections when he does appear, he's relentless and he won't leave you alone until you trigger the next story beat, until you manage to like get into a cutscene. But sometimes you don't know where you're going. There was a section where I played running around in circles for about 20 minutes. That's like, you've got this whole city area. It's like a maze as well. You're trying to work out these new routes. Then it all sort of, almost in a Dark Souls way, it sort of circles back to itself as well.
Right.
And I was just doing endless loops because every time I thought I'd shaken him, he'd just like airdrop in front of me.
Right.
Or just come, I'd see him in the distance running at me in full steam and I'm just having to like dodge out the way and stuff like that. And he's nonstop. It's really scary.
So I've never played Resident Evil 3. Mm. So I had really no idea what to expect from that. The only way I know Nemesis is through the fucking dreadful movies.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's hilarious in that. Like, I actually like the second movie better than the first just because he's just dumb. But there's the first thing I saw of this was a gif of just like, you play as Jill, right?
In this.
And her running sort of forward and then like Nemesis leaping from like behind her and sort of doing like almost like a Matrix style skid as he lands and turning around and like lashing out with this giant like tentacle. I had no idea that this was what he was like.
The tentacle, he does that a lot as well. So anytime you feel like you've made some ground on him, he'll either jump in front of you, chase you down, or whip the tentacle, grab your legs, and then pull you towards him.
Right.
And then he'll just start swinging for you. He'll just constantly throwing punches, trying to grab you at all occasions. The way, I mean, looking at that on paper, it feels like this feels impossible.
But, or frustrating.
Yes. But a way they've sort of counteracted that is adding a move called the quick step, which is basically like a dodge burn. But it's a sharp maneuver that you can do in sort of any direction. But when done just right, you can time it just right. It gives you, like, it slows down time ever so slightly and gives you a boost. The distance as well.
Right.
So you can usually boost, get far away, turn around and pop some shots off and maybe down him for a second. And by downing him, I mean take him down to one knee.
Right.
He sits there for 10-15 seconds and then gets back up again. But it gives you enough time to get to the next location. It's very tense. But it does create this great sense of pace and urgency in the game as well. You feel like you're in true danger and you're constantly being chased. Whereas Mr. X, he felt like once you got a couple of rooms past him, he'd basically lose you at that point and you could shake him off. And as long as you were quiet, he wouldn't find you again for a while, unless he's prowling. Nemesis is just on your tail at all times.
So is the entire game going to be like that? Because that would feel incredibly relentless.
Yes.
Like, you get to the end of it and just go like, oh.
I imagine so. Especially for people, you know, there's the classic Resident Evil idea of going into a save room, right? And taking your time, managing your inventory and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So from what I could tell, he doesn't go in there. But I have a feeling that he might in this game. I feel like that'd be a cool thing to do, right?
It's that thing that, like, because I love Alien Isolation. I think it's my favorite horror game of all time. But that thing where, like, even saving in isolation isn't safe. Like, as you slot that key card in and you're waiting for those little, like, switches to light up.
Yeah.
You're like, if that fucking thing comes and spears me through the back before that final one's on.
Yeah.
And I do love the idea of, like, being in that safe room. You're about to go on the typewriter and he just kicks the door down.
Yeah. So I think it was maybe Jesse or somebody I read somewhere had the fantastic idea of, what if he only entered a save room, but say if you've used it too much, if you've been spamming it or something like that, and then he can burst in and like rip the door down or something like that. And that would, like, especially if it had the save room music and everything, it brought you into this false sense of security as well. Anyway, but he just like Alien Isolation, actually, there's periods, especially what I played, where he's not there. They sort of storyline wise remove him for a second. Like,
it's just having a sit down.
Yeah, you'll trigger cuts. Like, for example, in the part that I played, I triggered a cutscene where I went down into a sewer. And I went through such a small gap that he couldn't get through,
right?
And slid down a thing that created enough separation that he had effectively lost you.
Gotcha.
And then I played out a whole sewer section where he wasn't there.
Right.
But then he always comes back around. It's just like, course, every nemesis section, there'll be a quiet section, and then there'll be a nemesis section again. And so from what I can gather, if it's like in Resident Evil 3, he'll always be the boss as well.
Right.
So I think maybe there's one or two occasions in the original where he's not, but pretty much every time he's the boss battle. It's just sometimes there's a different variation of him or in different setting. So you're going to be seeing a lot of this guy, I tell you.
Does it feel like the original?
Not massively. Like, it feels like the original, like Resident Evil 2 remake feel like the original. And that's what I said. And it absolutely feels like more of the same with Resident Evil 2, with the addition of Nemesis and the quick step.
Yeah,
you can barely tell it apart. It's like a lot of the locations will probably be the same as well if it copies the original, like the police station, you visit that.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, you know, a lot of the puzzles felt very familiar in 2. Like, I only played the beginning of it, but I recognised a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the same for 3 then?
From what I can tell, they have said on record that they've had to change this one up a lot more because the story didn't work as well. Something that is different and why they've included Resistance on this one is there's only one playthrough. It's just Jill's playthrough.
Right.
Whereas in Resident Evil 2, obviously you've got Claire or Leon's A and Claire and Leon's B as well. So there's like 4 different variations there.
Yeah.
So this one is way more focused. And hopefully that works out better for pacing and just general length of the game. The original is quite short. You can do it in the first playthrough, I'd say about 7 hours, but most playthroughs you could probably do in about 4, which is quite
That's
short game.
Quick, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully they've extended it out a little bit as well. And I'm excited to see what they've done with some of the other characters as well, because in the original they were kind of very cardboard cutouts of 2D characters.
Yeah.
And they seem, from what I've seen so far, they've added a bit of depth to that as well. So I'm excited to see what they do and if they change the story too much.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah.
And then also this week, we got some more news on Baldur's Gate, of which you were a big fan, Matt.
Yeah. And it's not just we got more news. We actually got to see it. Got to watch like an hour and a half of it being played from the start of the game onwards, which was really exciting because nobody knew what it was going to be, because obviously there's not been a Baldur's Gate game for nigh on 20 years now. Basically, I mean, 2001 I think was Baldur's Gate 2, and so Larian, who are the people that made Divinity Original Sin 2 and 1 and all the other Divinity games, they're the people who have kind of taken over, because it used to be a BioWare game, and obviously BioWare have nothing to do with that anymore. So there was kind of this big idea of like, well, what's it going to look like? Is it going to look like an old game? Is it going to look like a throwback? Is it going to be super modern? And they found like this really nice in between, I think, where it's still like Baldur's Gate was. It's a top down isometric sort of like look at, like almost like seeing it from a god's eye view.
Okay.
Yeah.
But when you chat to characters, it actually becomes much more like The Witcher or Dragon Age, where like the camera swoops down and it becomes a cinematic camera.
Oh, okay.
And even though that camera is always pulled out, actually all those characters are the same character models. Like, they all are motion captured, they've got facial expressions.
Sure.
So it's actually like a super modern interpretation of actually quite an old style of play. But the other interesting thing is it doesn't really play exactly the same as Baldur's Gate 2 and 1 did, which I think might be a point of contention for a lot of old fans. But I actually think it makes a real lot of sense, because A, you have to update Baldur's Gate. Like, you can't
have people
play in the same way that obviously a Resident Evil 3 remake can't just be tank controls and all of that, like, and just with prettier graphics. It just wouldn't make sense. But what they've done is, the thing that's amazing about the original Baldur's Gates is what they were doing was translating Dungeons and Dragons, which is obviously a game that you play with your friends around a table using lots of chat and dice. And they managed, through an amazing hybrid of mad systems, to turn it into a video game. Sort of shouldn't have ever been able to happen, but they did. And so they turned what was at that time second edition into a video game. Well, what Larian have done is, rather than trying to make a direct sequel to those games, they've looked at what fifth edition D&D is and gone, well, let's make that into the game.
Okay.
So actually there's quite a lot of mechanical differences.
Right.
And the most fundamental one, I think, is in second edition D&D, the way that they did that for Baldur's Gate is they tried to make all the battles feel real time.
Yeah.
Even though technically they were turns, they didn't show you those turns happening, so all your characters were moving all the time.
Right.
Whereas now they're just like, look, everybody knows that D&D works turn-based, so we're not going to have any pretend. I also think like the rise of D&D podcasts have probably just made people realize that's how Dungeons and Dragons works.
Yeah.
So you've got all of that, but it now means that you get like the heightened stakes that you get in D&D when you're waiting for those dice to roll and you're like, am I going to get like a natural 20 on the dice or am I going to fucking completely fail?
Yeah.
And the way that they're doing that is you've got a bit of that XCOM, you know, sort of like when you aim like your bow and arrow or your gun in XCOM, it's like you've got 40% chance to hit.
Right.
Mm. And so you get all of that. So it's like, oh, is this going to work? But the other thing you've got is, in a D&D game, you can obviously always just talk to your dungeon master and go, well, hey, I've got this idea and I want to see if it works. And the DM sort of invents something on the fly to see if you can do it. They've tried to roll all of that into the game to make it mad. So the one thing that they were experimenting with on the stream that they were doing last night is basically there was a monster running towards his player character and he was just like, all of his attacks weren't hitting. So it was just like, I've got nothing left. So literally had his character pull his boots off and hurl the boots at the enemy. And it's just little bits like that. Like they pushed a halfling off a cliff and it fell off the cliff and didn't die. So they then picked up a box and hurled it off the cliff at him.
Right.
Oh, and all these little sort of really tactile things, because you have at the bottom in the like the UI, just things like push, pull, dip, jump, right, all these little things.
It's like Monkey Island.
Yeah, exactly like Monkey Island, but applying those to just everything in the world.
Right.
So it's sort of like if you dip sword on like bonfire, you'll put your sword in the bonfire and set it on fire so that you've got...
So is there like an element of like real physics like in Breath of the Wild sort of thing?
So actually it was reminding me a lot of Breath of the Wild, remind me a lot of like how Dishonored works in the fact that like you literally everything is a tool to be used.
Yeah.
So it is like if you, one of the big rules in Dungeons and Dragons is if you have the high ground, obviously you've got an advantage there.
Yes.
So what Baldur's Gate lets you do is if you can see some crates, pick the crates up and stack them and stand on top of the crates and then you've got advantage.
Right.
And sort of like they all affect like the stats that you've got on if your attacks will land better or not. So mechanically, it's like it's incredible.
Yeah.
But it also seems to be like I think it's not just mechanics that an RPG relies on, right? It's story as well.
Yeah.
And they've got this incredible story where it doesn't have to be a direct sequel to Baldur's Gate 2 because Baldur's Gate 2 finished what those games were about. But what it's done, it's sort of taken the... So the story of those old games was is that you were actually, it turned out, you were basically the spawn of the God of Murder.
Right.
So you got So you got this dark passenger that was sort of part of you, but it meant that you were so much stronger than other people. Whereas in this one, what you are is, at the very, very start, they've got this incredible, like, Blizzard-grade opening cinematic where there's basically a Nautiloid, which is, if you can imagine, a giant flying squid spaceship.
Right.
Done.
Yeah, there we go. Which has been piloted by a Mind Flayer. Now, you might know the Mind Flayer from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
So, obviously, they look like Cthulhu, basically. Mm. Well, it's really obvious through a bit of like visual storytelling that they might be dying out because there's all these corpses in this spaceship and there's one that's the last one left. And this Mind Flayer has been, like, stealing other people from, like, cities and putting them in the ship and infecting them with a tadpole that basically goes into their mind and will eventually turn them into a Mind Flayer.
Right.
So there's obviously sort of like this, he's the last of his kind, but you're one of the people on the ship, so now you have this tadpole in your head.
Right.
Which is allowing you to have special abilities beyond what you'd normally have. Okay, and so it's
all
this...
We're still talking about the same game.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So what's going on here, isn't there?
So at the start of the game, that ship crashes and you've come off it, and it's finding those people that are on that ship, and that becomes your team.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm really interested to see where all of that goes, but depending on who you choose, because you can play, like... They're saying that there's going to be at least 5 different characters you can play as or make your own. But anybody that you don't choose to play as becomes someone that you can have in your party. But the one that they were showing you, he was like, he's what's called a vampire spawn. So he's not a vampire, but he's enslaved to a vampire.
Okay, like a familiar.
Yeah. So he's got certain elements, but he needs to drink blood. And so it's like when you set up camp, do you want to drink the blood of all the people in your team?
Yes.
And so it's like there's bits where like they're rolling dice and it's sort of like, how much am I going to drink? Am I going to go all the way and potentially kill them, or just a little bit? And it's like, if you go all the way and you maybe don't quite kill them, it's like, how do I explain in the morning when someone's feeling really sick?
Yeah.
And it's like, you're looking quite perky.
Yeah.
So there's all of these, like, it's all the things that I love about D&D. Like, this is why I listen to D&D podcasts. It's why I, you know, try and play it when I can. Mm. All of that in like this incredible sort of package that's been built by what is my favorite RPG team. Like, I basically think
jam.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you seem fairly excited for this game.
And the thing is like, so they're bringing this out in early access this year, so you'll get to play the first acts of it, which is something that they did with Divinity, because actually player feedback for them is really important before they finish the rest of it.
Yeah.
We've got that coming out this year, and I've got Final Fantasy VII Remake coming out this year. Ooh. I think this might be the best year I've ever had.
When does that actually come out, the Baldur's Gate?
So they haven't said, basically,
when does that pack come out, the access?
They said like yesterday at PAX that they're hoping in the next couple of months, but there are quite a few significant bugs at the moment. The one thing being is save games don't currently work at the moment. And they were playing it live, and like all of his party got killed in the first battle, so he had to start the game again because they couldn't reload. But he's like, once that's sorted out, and once some of the other, like, there's a few animation bugs and stuff like that, once they're happy, they're like, they put that out, and they reckon there's about 12 hours of it ready for people to play.
That's cool. Decent. How game, transparent, yeah, they're being, like, off the bat. Like, they've only just like shown it for
the
first
time.
Yeah,
that's the first time.
They show you all this stuff and tell you all the bugs that already exist in the game. Like, that's really cool.
That's why I think like Larian are like unique among so many sort of developers, because they just want people to understand how games are built and why it takes them a very long time to do it. But also, if you get as many people as possible to involve themselves, and like, because you can play as five different characters that all have, you could play them in so many different ways. So you're talking like hundreds of different variations how you could play that. Get everybody in, test that opening area, and then it's like, then we'll show you what can happen.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's really exciting.
See, it sounds like a good game.
Yeah.
But not
it's
as
definitely
good.
Not for everyone.
Not as good as The Endless Search.
Oh, no. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we're coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it Endless Search?
So this week is my very first time in the hosting chair. Mm. And it is The Perpetual Pursuit.
It's our favorite. It's our current favorite, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it helps out. Can you remember the name of the guy that emailed
Well,
him?
I've done my own.
Oh,
these are all my original
own
ones.
So these
aren't
from the list of
these are not
over
from the
2,000.
List.
Was it? I think it was over 2,000 that you made.
So I've done all of these myself.
Okay.
They're all films, and they're all from IMDb's top 250 films of all time.
Nice, okay.
So that narrows it down slightly. There are 10 of them. Some are easy, some are a little less easy.
Okay. Is there a theme?
They're all films from IMDb's top 250. Yes, exactly.
Don't get a point for that, then.
Good God, like, come on, I was really happy with this.
All right, okay.
And so, for anybody that hasn't heard this before, do you want to give a quick refresher?
Well, it's basically like a thesaurus on your favourite film. Mm-hmm. So if you were Star Wars, it would be like...
Space Battle.
There you go, perfect.
Yeah. A thesaurus, of course, not a therosaurus, as I said last week, because I'm a numpty.
Yeah. It's all right, you know now.
And of course, it's, you know, whoever shouts the answer first gets the point.
Yep, cool. Let's do it.
If it comes down to a tiebreaker, it's wrestling.
What?
You two have got to wrestle.
Okay, that's fine. I'd
win. Shit, Dale's definitely going to beat me.
I know all the moves.
Half Nelson, I don't know.
That is a move, yeah.
I know
not that commonly used, but yeah.
No, that was a kind of Big Daddy, Giant Haystacks kind of.
A full Nelson is like the proper luck. You can do a half Nelson suplex there as well. Anyway,
on to The Perpetual Pursuit. Right, are you both ready?
Sure.
Indeed.
I'm going to start with Retaliators Finish Competition.
Retaliators Finish Competition.
Is there like a colon before, after Retaliators? Is that...
There might be.
There might be.
Okay. Retaliators. So what?
Retaliators Finish Competition.
Oh,
Avengers Endgame.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm going to have to split that point.
Okay,
you said it at exactly the same time, half each.
It was Finish that got it for me.
Yeah.
When I heard Finish,
so
I was like,
Retaliators was what I got.
Oh, I got stuck on that one. I worked at Endgame before I worked at Avengers.
I thought Finish would have been the easier bit. Bandits of the Misplaced Chest.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Well done.
Boom. There's something about the cadence, the way he said that, that made me think of that less than the word.
Yeah. Well, there's one in here that if you don't get it purely from the cadence, then...
Okay.
This is quite hard to say. Swindler, singular.
What? Okay. Swindler?
Swindler, singular.
Oh, God. I'm like, all I can think of right now is like Thief One. Something
that's
like
a video
that.
Game.
Yeah. Something like that, though. Oh, my God.
You're not a million miles away.
Yeah, I can turn.
One of those words might be correct.
Probably one. Oh, my God.
Five more seconds.
I'm completely blanking.
There's not a film like called Con One, is there? Or
Con Air?
There isn't, but there is a film called Rogue One.
Oh, come on. That was foolish.
And also, all of the words are from Thesaurus.
That is not the name of the film as well. He should have done a Star Wars story.
Oh, shut up. And then it would have been really fucking obvious. This is my least favourite, but okay. Initiation.
Start?
Yeah, something like that. Beginning. All I can think of is Annihilation. I know it's not that. I need to get that out of my mind.
Alex, look at me.
I thought these would be a lot easier.
It's easy when you know.
I know, right?
Initiation.
Another word for initiation or start. Again, one of my favourite films of all time.
Oh, God.
By one of my favourite directors.
Oh, my God. Drawing a blank.
Single word.
Yeah.
I guess it was a single word.
One of his other films is a particular favourite of the podcast.
Oh, Inception.
There you go.
Really needed the clue for that one.
I like this one. Lake Bitches.
Lake Bitches.
I'm thinking of War Dogs. It's not War Dogs. Something.
Come on, do you like
that? I know. You're looking at me.
But that's because you said,
as well.
You said one word correct.
Right, okay.
Lake Bitches.
Yeah. River. Reservoir Dogs.
There you go.
Thinking of River. River Dogs.
So three and a half to half.
I'm not. How many have we got? 10.
We got another. We're halfway there.
Right.
Yeah. Disfigurement mug.
Scarface.
There you go.
I was thinking a cup. In my head, I had an ugly cup.
It is quite hard going through and trying to think of. Like I was trying to do Raging Bull, and there's nothing good for a bull.
Angry Cow.
Yeah, we've actually had that one, I think.
Oh, have we? Right. Yeah. Okay. That's it, because I don't listen to the podcast. Sorry.
Unbelievable.
Dale's having a drink.
That's all right, carry on.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
I'll wait till you've finished. Builds the tension.
There you go.
I'm not going to cut to an ad break or anything like that.
Right.
Ready?
Yep.
Sovereign Wife. Again, another particular.
What's another word for wife? Loz.
That would be weird.
That is my wife's name, by the way.
She's the only wife in the world.
Yeah. For me, yes, Matt. Yeah. She doesn't listen to this podcast, so I don't know why I'm trying to butter her up. Oh, God. What is another word for wife?
What was she that day back in May?
I mean, she was my fiancée back then.
Well, no, I mean...
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got it. What was the first one again?
Sovereign.
Is it Princess Bride?
It is the Princess Bride.
I don't think I stand a chance.
Well, you don't know. Like, you've got to get the rest right.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Ken. Because you didn't get Rogue One. You can't win.
There we go.
It's all right, mate.
But you can draw. You can draw.
I can draw.
And I play like fun. I say, if you want to wrestle, then go for it. Three left. This one is Kooky Ceiling, Anger Artery.
Kooky ceiling, angry artery.
Anger artery.
Anger artery.
Anger artery.
I know, right? Something. Oh,
break it, distill it down into its
vein. Is the last one, I guess. Blood rain, blood vein, angry.
Vein is ceiling. Incorrect.
All right, okay.
What ceiling another? Would be roof, I'd imagine.
Well, oh. Might not be.
Oh.
I would say focus on the last two.
Something heart.
No, it's not a part of the human body. Their arteries are also something else.
Oh, okay. Like a
pathways, aren't they?
Oh, I did not
Maybe
know
not a pathway, but something else. That other
I'm thinking about
artery.
No, that's not the right one.
Just imagine it, your body's just full of shells.
Yeah.
What's another word for kooky?
Crazy. Quirky. Mad.
Weird. Oh.
Mad. What? Mad.
Kooky so, ceiling, anger artery, mad.
Mad. My God.
Can't think of a film that begins with mad.
Mad Max Fury Road.
There you go!
Oh, ceiling of Max is very...
Oh, what? Yeah, come on.
Just have a go at thesaurus.com, not me.
I absolutely get it, but it's not an easy one.
Right, this is the one that's, I think, purely down to cadence.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Latch, cash, and a pair of scorching
lock,
cylinders.
Lock, stock, and loaded working barrels.
Matt was there slightly before you.
Yeah, it's fine.
So, it's all on this last one, which is my favourite.
Okay. Wait, hang on. Can we do a quick score check?
You are on 4.5, Dale. Matt is on 3.5. So, if Matt gets this, it's a draw.
And we wrestle. That's really what I want.
Okay. Well, in that case, you need to let Matt guess this. And it is Spunky Ticker.
Okay.
Who's got a spunky ticker?
Crazy Heart.
Braveheart.
Oh!
Oof.
There you
God,
go.
Yes.
Dale got the spunky ticker.
Spunky for Brave, I suppose, yeah.
It's all there.
One. Yeah, it's an odd one.
If you're spunky, you're brave.
Except for
sure.
Max, that one was mad. Ceiling.
But that's, you know, Max.
Maximum. You hit your ceiling, I suppose. I think
of
it's very.
It is.
It's a stretch, though.
Yeah, I think it's a stretch.
Yeah. Look.
Good though, it's good fun. I like that game.
Well, that's good
because I'm actually
we're
right. going to
be doing it every single week.
I'm actually
for eternity
right. until we get through all 2,000 of his entries.
Have we done it on games yet?
No, we haven't. No, we should do it on games. Yeah, it's good fun.
There you go.
Unless you've got a different game, then write in with it.
How do they do that, Dale?
IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. Please Perfect. Write in with your. What was the name of the thing again? Endless Search game.
Yes.
I was going to say Perpetual Pursuit,
no. But it can be anything.
Yeah.
Matt, you've got the first piece of feedback.
I do, yes. It's from Ollie Smith, who says, Hi, IGN, /the firm,
Hello.
In capitals.
I can speak on behalf of both.
I was going to say, we're not all the firm.
You sit firmly in the middle of the two.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd throw my 2 cents in regarding the trophy hunting discussion you were having last week.
Hello.
This is your specialist subject, isn't it, Dale?
Mm-hmm.
I totally get that it's not for everyone, but I love collecting trophies, and I've never treated the system as something that narrows or restricts my experience of the game. In fact, for me, it's quite the opposite.
Yep.
I only hunt trophies in games I love, and consequently, that allows me to experience the entirety of my absolute favourites. I'm currently on the charge towards Red Dead 2's Platinum Trophy.
Whoa, that one's tough.
Have you got that one, Dale?
No. You have to get like compendium at every animal in the
right.
game.
Is it all just
super tough?
Is it all just for the single? It's not multiplayer trophies, is it? As well?
I think there is some multiplayer ones, but I think they're more achievable from what
right.
I remember.
Mm-hmm.
It was the single player one. There was a few, and you have to get like a gold medal on every single mission in the game. As
sure.
well.
Right. Mm-hmm. He says it's added a little structure to the post-game fun while enabling me to stumble upon bits of the game I would never have seen otherwise, which is something I do quite like about trophies.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm.
Look at trophies as a little dopamine hit alongside the opportunity to soak up all the stuff in the games you love the most. Love the pod and the site, guys. Keep up the excellent work and wish me luck on my way to platinum number 108.
So... That's exactly. So I'm on 107 right now. So that my next one will be my 108.
Race
as well.
To 108.
He'll probably win because I'm not going for anything right now. But
yeah, but he's doing Red Dead.
That is true.
What you want to do is just find, like, you know those when you used to be able to get like movie tie-in games that would give you the plat in sort of 20 minutes.
See, that's the thing. So in the early days, I used to do, absolutely used to do that, right? But in the last, I'd say, since I've worked here especially, I've only really now go for games that I love. Like recently, the last one I got was Final Fantasy VII, mm-hmm. just because I decided I want to replay that again on PlayStation, and I've set myself the goal of I'm going to aim for this. Yeah. And I also got to do things, even though I've finished that game so many times, I got to do things I'd never done, like get Barrett to be your date at the Golden Saucer, mm-hmm. because the trophy sort of suggested I do that.
Yeah.
So I'm absolutely on board with him. That's like kind of what I try to do these days. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, some of them are still like Telltale games. They're ones that just sort of come naturally. Come easily. But like one I got last year I was quite proud of was The Last of Us, because mm-hmm. I'd never gone back and finished it on the hardest difficulty. That was the only one I had left to do. So I just went back to play it and just did that. And then it's had a great time. But also it's a one I can be proud of as well, I think.
I mean, it also suggests you're actually quite good at games if you can do The Last of Us on the hardest mode. Yeah. It's like,
I mean,
that's
I play that game,
game
a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Like, I know where all the spawn points are and things like that.
Is there any game or platinum hunt that you gave up on because it was just too much?
Loads.
Oh, really?
Absolutely loads. I can list them all. Like, but there's tons where there's ones like Red Dead, for example. When I start a game that I love, or you know, I grow to love, I look at the list and I think, yeah, I could maybe do this. And then sometimes it becomes apparent that this is ridiculous. Right. I will never. And then I'll just sort of stop. Or I'll get the ones I want to get.
Yeah.
And then just give up the chase for the platinum. Red Dead was absolutely one of them. Once I finished the game, I looked at them all, thought I could do some of these. But then I started to do the animal collection thing. And then one of them was ridiculous. Like all the different types of birds that you have to find.
Right.
And I was like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Gave up on it immediately. But I think I'm going to try, as long as it's fair, I'm going to try for the Resident Evil 3 one. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Yeah.
Just depends on how fair they are and how many times I have to play through the game. Or if I want to play through the game that many times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm on board. I agree with his opinion.
You have the second piece of feedback.
I do. It's from Neil Clark. And it's also about platinums.
There is a theme here.
Yes. I was listening to your most recent podcast and I wanted to send my 2 pence worth. So he said 2 pence. He said 2 cents.
Interesting. Oh, what a global world we live in, eh? Mine's going to be in euros.
That would be cents as well.
Oh, yeah. It's more expensive as euros.
Yeah.
Bad exchange rate.
I feel I have a complex relationship with them as I want to try and platinum every game, but I look at some of the trophies and find myself thinking, fuck off. I do that. Also, when I'm in pursuit of them, if there's any real grind to get the trophy to pop, I find myself starting to resent the game. Lego Marvel 2, I'm looking at you. I recently platinum both Lego Marvel and Jedi Fallen Order. When both plats popped, it didn't really do much for me. More of a tick in the box. But when I platinumed, not totally sure if that's a real word, God of War, I did feel a real sense of pride, mainly because trying to beat the last Valkyrie was a 2-3 endeavor. What does that mean? 2-3?
Maybe it means like two. Maybe that was a 2-3 days endeavor.
Oh, okay, yeah. It says was a 2-3. Fuck me, that was hard. It was hard actually. I've got that one as well.
See, I started doing the Valkyries, and I was just like, there's more to life.
They're mostly not that much of a challenge. It's the very last. Well, right. They're tough, but the very last one is an absolute
doozy.
That
was a slight dig at me there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They're not that hard.
They're not that bad. But the last one, I put it down to easy on the last one as well, because it was just so tough.
Oh, will it still let you pop the trophy though if you've done it?
Oh, that's rubbish.
Well, I was right at the end then, and it was the last one to get, and I'd seen it all and I just wanted to be happy. Well, yeah. Fuck me, that was hard. But the God of War Platinum Chase was actually a fun task I looked forward to undertaking. The Valkyrie Trophy is my top gaming achievement. There are certain games, though, I have no interest in trying to 100%, namely The Last of Us, as I don't want to observe obsessive compulsion to ruin what is possibly the most perfect of games. Same goes for Uncharted 4, but this game also has some fuck-off trophies. E.g. Russian roulette, defeat enemies with a pistol, followed by a machine gun, followed by a grenade, all within 15 seconds. Fuck off. I've actually got that one. I've got the platinum trophy and tried for. Usually on those sort of things, there's like, you can quickly look on YouTube and someone had shown you a quick way of doing it, quick way of attempting it. While I enjoy the pursuit of trophies and enjoy that, he's tried to write the noise as bring when they pop, some games can be ruined by obsessing too much. Anyway, just some thoughts I had. And considering I live in Hanoi, I assume it's in Hawaii, right? So Hanoi, I guess. We have school closures at the moment due to the impending zombie apocalypse. So I had a few spare minutes to write an email. Keep the pods coming. Always look forward to new episodes. Neil, currently not a zombie.
Good.
That's good.
I have another email about trophies, but it's slightly different. So this is from Andrew Lynch, and okay. it's about trophies that he wants again. Now, I'm going to paraphrase, because he swears a lot, and okay. well, you just read it out. So.
Wait, since when do we not swear on a podcast?
Well, I'm just being polite, because okay. I too bring an air of professionalism to the podcast that you perhaps don't. So he was saying, last episode, you had a question about trophies you'd like to get again.
Right.
He actually wants to get them all again.
Oh.
And the reason for that, and I kind of agree, because when you get that little ping and it saves the screenshot, it's always the shittiest part of what you get. You don't, it's like, that is a sense of achievement, right? You've just done something amazing. And normally it's on a menu screen or something like that.
It's always a delay. There's always like a 3 second delay from when you've done the thing to the trophy popping and then the picture. The amount of times I've seen it is a black screen. It's like the final cutscene is just kicking in or something.
Yeah. So it's like the one thing, because I'm playing through Dark Souls 3 at the moment, and it's like you obviously get a trophy for killing a boss. Yeah. You know, those bosses are fucking difficult to kill. And what I want it to grab the screenshot as I'm dealing the final blow.
Or a video, exactly.
Yeah, I think a video would be.
And like, it's always when it's collapsed and faded out of existence, and all that's left is the bonfire. And like, that's I see the bonfire all the time. I don't need to see that on my screen.
What they could do is take almost like a burst photo of like the last 3 seconds, and then you can choose the frame that you want to
represent. Send an email to Sony, mate.
There you go. Give me a job.
Presumably, you could use the share button to capture the last X minutes of video yourself. But
you could, but then you wouldn't see the ping would still be delayed. No.
Yeah.
You could Photoshop it.
It's a lot of work.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Maybe Sony should just sort it out. Anyway, he basically wants to redo all of his games. Would you do that? All 108 Platinums?
Do you know what? I'd like to see on the next gen of console. I know they're just probably going to carry it over, but it would be cool to have like a fresh start with people, and then maybe
people would go nuts if they did that.
But then maybe have like a legacy like section.
You could prestige your trophies. Yeah.
But I like the idea of like, because when I used to do it in the early days, it was very much a competitive element with my friends.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, I'm on this many now, I'm on this many. When you've had like two generations of consoles already and the Vita as well, it's got that competition aspect of it is gone, except for individual games.
Yeah.
So it would be quite cool to sort of have a fresh start. They're not going to do that because they're building in the ecosystem, right? They want people to stay in PlayStation or in Xbox. And achievements and trophies are one part of that.
Yeah.
I don't think like the idea of being able to prestige a trophy though. Like, if you can get the platinum again, you get a better version of it where like the actual trophy is like two trophies on top of each other. Or
that'd be quite cool. One thing I do really think they need to bring for next gen, and Xbox kind of do already. We were talking about it today, actually.
Yeah.
Or maybe yesterday. Was the idea of trackers.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I believe I don't really play Xbox that much.
They do
home,
do it.
But they
so
do have
quite
the trackers,
a lot of
right?
them, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I want to see if it says get 10 of these type of kills, I want to see that I've got 8 of them already. Because the amount of times on games I've been, doing things aimlessly, not really knowing when it's going to pop. And then, you know, eventually it does. But.
Well, that's the, like, both Matt and I are very close to getting the Siege Platinum.
Yeah.
And one of the things I have to do is a ranked win with all original operators. And I've literally had to go back to the beginning because I can't remember which ones that
you've
I
got,
won
like a
matches
checklist,
with.
Right?
Yeah. And also which ones that were victories through ranked. And
But the reality is this whole system is, you know, it's another form of a game, right? It's like a meta game on top. Yeah. So let's lean into that. Give me more information to work with. Instead of you having to write down these on a piece of paper, show a check sheet, you know? Like, that's what it is. We're ticking boxes, right? And some people get joy out of that, some people don't. But I do get joy out of that. So lean into it. Give me more with it.
Yep.
That's what I want. Again, Sony, hire me in your trophy department
team. There you go. Last piece of feedback.
Yeah, we've got a final one. So this is from Craig Stewart from Aberdeen in Scotland.
Mm.
Afternoon, chaps. Last week, I made a rare venture onto the bus for my morning commute to work. However, right in front of me was an even rarer beast. The man seated in front of me was playing a PS Vita, a console I have long since seen in the wild. And on it, he was playing the exceptional Tearaway. Tearaway is good. I do like Tearaway.
Yeah, Tearaway is awesome.
I felt a sense of pride wash over me being a Vitaphile myself. I have a lot of affection for my old trusty Vita, though what happened next was unexpected to say the least. I've not read this, so I have no idea what
I would never
happens.
Refer to myself as a Vitaphile, by the way. It sounds a little bit too close to something else.
So, here we go. As I removed my headphones, separating my senses from the soothing morning dose of Enya, my ears would be immediately assaulted by the heaviest of metal, possibly Scandinavian in origin, blaring out from the failing containment of the man's headphones. Granted, we should respect everyone's right to play their games in their own desired manner, but this was a baffling combination, which, yes, tearaway and Scandinavian metal. Mm. I do believe there could be an alternative timeline when I have given into my primal instincts and struck this man with the knuckle-furnished side of my open hand.
Oh, really?
Well,
wow. Yeah, chill out, mate.
Obviously, I didn't do this. The bus doors opened, the gust of wind rushed in, and the man simply departed the bus as his ponytail and leather duster gracefully danced in the breeze. That's the complete picture, now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I know, I've got the cut of his jib.
Yeah. Sometimes at night, I lie awake and think about what he's playing now. Perhaps Animal Crossing while listening to Dimmu Borgir, whatever that is. Or perhaps enjoying Cradle of Filth and Spyro simultaneously. Who knows? From this experience, I obviously thought I would ask you guys if there is any particular way you enjoy to play through games. Any habits, routines, or rituals you do when getting into a game? I know people enjoy listening to podcasts during long playthroughs, or sitting at a couch or a desk, but when you play through as many games as you do for reviews, does that sometimes get in the way of playing the game or experiencing it in the manner you would want to? Personally, I only start new games on a weekend or a day off, as I don't like starting anything new, particularly narrative-driven games, when I only have a short amount of time to get really stuck in.
Mm. So I listen to podcasts and music on phone games and portal games, but when I'm at home, I tend to only ever listen to the game really focus on that.
I don't think I've ever listened to anything else.
Especially when it's work-related as well. If I'm playing something for work, then yeah, I just give my game the whole focus, especially because... The amount of hours I'm going into creating these, you know, soundtracks and sound effects and stuff. And that's sometimes half the experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, when I play Football Manager, I always listen to all sorts of music and all sorts of podcasts as well, because it's a game that you can do that with.
I think quite a lot of the games that we play anyway have really good sound design. You couldn't listen to some music while you're playing Siege.
No,
like, it would absolutely destroy the game.
It could, you'd just be terrible at it. You wouldn't hear people coming.
And in general, like, I tend to quite like the soundscapes a lot of the games I play. Like, I would never want to play Final Fantasy without listening to that soundtrack.
Right. Yeah.
There are certain games that I will listen to podcasts with. So, for example, I don't play it so much anymore, but when I have been on big sort of Destiny binges, like Destiny, unless you're playing in Crucible where you do need to listen to those footsteps, largely you can just have a good time while having something else going on. And quite often a lot of the stuff you're doing in Destiny is quite repetitive anyway.
Yeah.
So that helps sort of like helps combine two things that I want to do.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of the time, because I'm not very good at the Dark Souls games, but I do really, really enjoy them. So I'll spend quite a lot of time in an area learning where all the enemy placements are. While I'm doing that, I'll be listening to a podcast, and then it's almost like my final run against the boss. I'll then turn all that off so I can give it my attention.
100% focus.
Yeah.
It's like you're doing Eurovision.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, I really like games, and I like what they provide. So
yeah.
I don't want
to... It's all part of it, isn't it?
Yeah. I know Cardi listens to music, certainly when he's playing Hearthstone. I can remember shouting at him because I was like, I really like the music in Hearthstone, and he had no idea what any of like the audio cues of the cards were, and I was like, how do you not know? We've played this quite a lot together. And it's just like, oh well, the Beatles are better.
Yeah.
And it's like, there is a point there, but
yeah, I mean, if there's a game like Football Manager as well, where you can just, you don't have to listen to any sort of audio whatsoever, it feels like, you know, it's nice to do two things at once, especially when it's a podcast episode you want to listen to. Yeah, I've got music I listen to when I write.
I have that.
But I've got very specific stuff.
Oh, do you?
What's your inspirational writing?
Well, it's usually one of like three Sigur Rós albums that I put on. Mainly because even though there's lyrics, I can't have lyrics. That would be too distracting. And even though they are lyrics, they're Icelandic, so I can't understand them. So it's just noises anyway. Right. But any words, I feel like, throw me off.
Yeah.
But just having like sort of music in the background.
Yeah, I listen to like movie soundtracks a lot of the time. I think that works very well for writing.
Mm-hmm. I've got a Mogwai album I listen to quite a lot for writing, because obviously, I remember like in the earliest days of my career, like if I was listening to things with lyrics, I'd end up typing those lyrics.
Right.
And after a time, I did get out of that. So I can just listen to like normal pop tracks or whatever when I'm writing. But a lot of the time I'll use a Spotify kind of just like randomly selected, you know, here's music from films or TV or games, you know, I'd rather that.
Mm. What about you, Al? Do you do anything when you're playing games?
I listen to games.
Yep.
I play games. And that's it.
I play games.
As they were meant to be.
Yeah.
Cool. But no. It's all about experiencing them as the maker would want them to be experienced.
Yes. If you get your jollies by listening to Slipknot while playing Tearaway, then that's up to you. Whatever, was it Slipknot or was it Cradle of Filth or something?
He said it was just Scandinavian in origin, potentially. That's right, yeah. I think he was theorising Cradle of Filth might go with Spyro.
That's right, yeah.
There you go. Mm. Well, thank you very much for your letters, and also thank you very much for appearing on the podcast, gents, as always. It's a pleasure.
It's good fun.
Thank you.
And I'll be back again in 6 months' time when I decide.
You said it was going to be 3 months, and that was about 2 weeks ago.
I know. I feel like I'm on a roll. Anyway, it's always a pleasure, and I will speak to you later.
Bye.
I got that wrong.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.